From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, the long-awaited Inspector General's report was released today. In response to the report, President Trump said this.
Well, they fabricated evidence and they lied to the courts and they did all sorts of things to have it go their way. This was something that we can never allow to happen again.
Ohio Congressman Warren Davidson is here in just a moment with more on the Inspector General's report. And in the wake of the deadly shooting at the Pensacola Naval Air Station by a Saudi Air Force officer, there are calls to reevaluate the Saudi-U.S. military relationship. Question is, was this a terrorist attack? I'll talk with Claire Lopez, Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy. Also last week, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell drew a sharp contrast between the nation's two major political parties on religious freedom in remarks that he made on the Senate floor. I'll let you hear those, and we'll talk about it a little later here on Washington Watch. And a coercive and deceptively named bill entitled Fairness for All Act was introduced last Friday in the House of Representatives, intended as a compromise between religious liberty and those advocating for unrestrained sexual liberty. This bill would impose a sweeping anti-Christian, anti-science ideological mandate on our entire country. I'll talk about it in studio with Travis Weber, FRC's Vice President for Policy and Government Affairs. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to miss anything on your way home tonight, it will all be archived later there at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Hey, before we go to our first guest, let me remind you, as we approach the end of the year, the battle for America's future is far from over. And I want to ask you to partner with FRC so that we can continue to make a difference as we go into 2020, a big, important year. And when you give to FRC, to Washington Watch, before December 31st, your gift will be doubled thanks to a generous year-end challenge match. So I'm going to ask you to help us continue to advance faith, family, and freedom for the sake of America, for our children and grandchildren. We've got folks standing by today to take your phone call if you'd like to be a part of continuing to make sure that Washington Watch continues on your station and that the work of FRC continues here in our nation's capital. Pick up the phone, call 1-800-225-4008 and talk to one of our team members. Again, pick up the phone, call 800-225-4008, or you can just go to TonyPerkins.com and make the donation right there. All right. A long-awaited Justice Department Inspector General's report from Michael Horowitz examining the FBI's investigation into possible coordination between the Trump campaign and Russia was released today, clearing the Bureau's top leaders of conservatives' most serious allegations while providing some evidence for President Trump and his supporters to renew their attacks on the probe, questioning its veracity. Joining me now with his analysis is Congressman Warren Davidson, who represents the 8th District of Ohio and serves on the Financial Services Committee. Congressman Davidson, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to talk with you again.
All right. I know it hadn't been out long, but your initial thoughts in reviewing the Inspector General's report?
You know, the base thing I look at, Tony, is the golden rule. Would I want to be treated the same way that Donald Trump was treated? And, you know, look, no criminal wants to get caught, so that would be the retort from someone on the left. But this is the way what A.G. Barr's statement makes clear is on the thinnest possible evidence, naming associates whom Donald Trump never personally met or even spoke with on the phone, and foreign intelligence officers sourced information, Mr. Steele from Britain, sourcing information, which is really just opposition report, with this fancy-sounding name, Steele dossier, provides a basis for FISA surveillance. And that alone wasn't enough. They had to doctor the documents and then really abused the process. And so Horowitz makes that clear, and frankly, A.G. Barr makes it even more clear, in my opinion.
Yeah, I thought his comments were instructive. He said, quote, the Inspector General's report now makes clear that the FBI launched an intrusive investigation of a U.S. presidential campaign on the thinnest of suspicions that, in my view, were insufficient to justify the steps taken. That's pretty significant.
Yeah, very, very clear assessment by the inspector or by Attorney General Barr. And frankly, you know, if you go back when Donald Trump said that he believed the Obama administration had been spying on his campaign, people laughed at him and mocked at him and mocked him and said, you know, you just don't really understand how this works and all that. No, he understood what was going on. And frankly, the question is that the kind of, you know, work that we want our FBI to be engaged in? And when you go back to this long history of the effort to stop Donald Trump, as Peter Strzok and Lisa Page referred to it, an insurance policy, it looks like that really not the FBI broadly, but leaders within that organization and several others abused the power and access that they had access to, frankly, all the resources of the United States government that they were trusted to have access to, and they abused those privileges and access to target a political rival, now President Donald Trump, and it still didn't work. It didn't stop him from getting elected, and it still hasn't worked in trying to remove him from office. But frankly, lots of Democrats are anxious to pile on and reinforce that. And the question is that really the kind of framework we want to start using for our political campaigns, that now this presidential campaign, really Donald Trump's going to use those same tools to look at other campaigns? Could you imagine the reaction?
Yeah, I mean, this is reminiscent of years gone by in the FBI, which brought about some significant reforms in the agency because of the way it was used under J. Edgar Hoover. But this this validates many of the broad claims that the president made that the FBI had been politicized and was working against his campaign.
Well, if you go back to General Flynn, when he was the Deputy Director of National Intelligence, that's exactly one of the things that he warned about, was concerned about, that the politicization of the intelligence community. And he was known to be opposed to that, known to be working on a mandate from Donald Trump, should Donald Trump win, to reform those agencies. And so you look at, well, gee, why did they target General Flynn? Why did they target the Trump campaign? Because of all the candidates, that coalition that Donald Trump was putting together, that Flynn was a key part of, they knew Flynn knew the inner workings of what had been going on in that community. And that doesn't mean to say, look, we've looked at all these things all along the way. Flynn didn't want it to go further into him, so he fled out to, frankly, what Comey himself boasted of as a deceptive interview, which came in as a, hey, welcome to the White House. We're going to chat you up. And you don't know you're being interrogated, but that's what Comey called it. And he just boasted of it as a way, just a very sinister kind of system. And in my view, not what the American people expect from the FBI. And frankly, it's thankfully not what they're likely to get from the FBI, but it's unfortunately what Comey delivered.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Congressman Warren Davidson of Ohio, my guest, talking about the long-awaited Inspector General's report that came out today regarding the FBI's investigation of the Russia connection with the Trump administration. I want to one point in the report, and it's pretty lengthy. But it did push – I mean, it did provide some evidence to show that the CIA actually pushed back on the FBI when it came to using the Steele dossier that you made reference to, that they didn't feel like it was, you know, worthy of being considered and used, and they pushed back. So it doesn't look like the entire intelligence community was compromised. It does look like more of the fingers are pointing toward the FBI.
Right. And look, this was not a criminal investigation that was launched. It was a counterintelligence investigation. And so a lot of the safeguards that are out there for criminal prosecutions frankly, aren't as strong on intelligence. And so why are we doing that? And it's called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act for a reason. We're focusing on foreigners trying to protect the United States of America from enemies of our country. And what that system was used and abused to target an American citizen, not just an American citizen, an American candidate for president, and then the actual president of the United States. And it wasn't like they said, you know, Mr. Trump, we have some concerns, some of your associates, boom, 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 do you know this, do you know this, do you know that? There was nothing like that done, despite over and over again finding exculpatory evidence to say Donald Trump personally had no knowledge or awareness of this. Despite 2 years of the Mueller report going through it, they carried it on, even though they had well into it, concluded early into it. They continued that probe well after they knew that Donald Trump didn't personally have these connections that formed the basis for the counterintelligence investigation. It really is hard to imagine that this would have carried on in a normal course of events for actual security concerns. It was carried on because of personal animus of key actors towards the President of the United States.
So the motive here, the motive, as best as we can tell, and from the evidence presented in the, or the findings presented in this report, would be that it was politically motivated to stop Donald Trump from A, becoming president, or disrupting his presidency.
Yeah, and trying to do everything they can to make sure that he doesn't continue in office. And so, you know, you think about that. Look, it's not sedition because there's not actual violence engaged in it, but every other component of the crime of sedition would be met by people that willfully engaged in this. Now, I think there are a lot of people who got caught up in it and felt like where they were doing the right thing at the right time for the right reasons and all that. But I don't think they acted on full information. And frankly, that's kind of the point that the Attorney General Barr makes in his remarks about Horowitz's report. Horowitz was confined to information he had access to as the Inspector General of the FBI. So he didn't have access to the FBI information. He didn't have access to other information that our government has. And frankly, that's really the point of our classification system. It compartmentalizes the information. So when you look at it holistically, someone had holistic access to this, put this operation together, and frankly, or you know, numerous actors were working of their own volition in the same course, but it all had the same effect of, in my mind, you know, political motivated effort to try to stop Donald Trump from being president or governing effectively or being able to continue in another term as president.
Congressman, we're up against a break, but very quickly, where does this go now? I mean, you said there's several elements of what would meet sedition, no violence here, but will actions be taken to hold those accountable who clearly went beyond?
Attorney General Barr does that. I really hope Attorney General Barr does it.
All right. Well, I hope he does as well. We'll be watching that very, very closely. Congressman Warren Davidson, thanks so much for joining us and providing insight as this in this breaking story.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Congressman Warren Davidson of Ohio. All right. Don't go anywhere. Coming up next, Saudi military student engaged in a deadly shooting at the Naval Air Station in Pensacola last week. Was it terrorism? Is it time to reevaluate the relationship between Saudi officials and the United States military? We'll talk about that next here on Washington, Washington Voice.
Abortion is one of the most combative and sensitive moral and political questions in America today, even among Christians. There has been a renewed effort in theological liberal Christian circles to argue that the Bible does not oppose abortion. In light of these arguments, it is crucial for Christians to know what the Bible actually says about abortion. Does the Bible teach that life begins at conception or birth? Is abortion murder? In FRC's new publication titled Biblical Principles for Pro-Life Engagement, Personhood, Scripture, and Church History, author David Clausen addresses these questions with relevant passages in the Bible that inform how a Christian should think about abortion, the question of personhood, and a survey of how prominent church leaders have interpreted these passages throughout history. Learn more by visiting frc.org/unborn. That's frc.org/unborn.
Meadow Pollack was a high school senior who was tragically gunned down during the Parkland school shooting in Florida. In an emotional and gripping FRC Speaker Series event, her father, Andrew Pollack, and education expert Max Eden discussed the tragic massacre and the politically correct policies that allowed the Parkland shooting to happen. The Southern Poverty Law Center and the Obama administration promoted a false narrative that teachers and principals were racist and couldn't be trusted to enforce rules with consequences. Instead, they argued for healing circles and restorative justice. These policies enabled a psychopathic criminal to maintain a clean background and purchase a firearm used to murder 17 people at the high school. The Obama administration forced these leniency policies into hundreds of schools, serving millions of students across America. To listen to this event and to learn more, visit frc.org/speakers. That's frc.org/speakers.
Religious liberty is one of the most important yet misunderstood issues in America. There's a growing perception that protecting religious liberty is an attempt to lawfully allow bigotry and prejudice. Therefore, Christians need to be able to articulate with greater clarity and persuasiveness why they support religious liberty. Biblical Principles for Religious Liberty, Evidence from Scripture and Church History, is a new publication from Family Research Council that presents biblical and theological arguments for why religious liberty is worth defending and encourages Christians to engage in the fight to preserve America's first freedom. This publication presents key biblical texts that support a broad understanding of religious freedom and key theological arguments based on those texts. In an increasingly secular world, Christians must understand and advocate for religious liberty. Learn more by visiting frc.org/belief.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Merry Christmas as we move into the Christmas season. Saudi Second Lieutenant Mohammed Saeed Al-Shamarani, 21, killed three people and injured eight when he opened fire at a naval air station in Pensacola on Friday. He was then shot dead by sheriff's deputies. All eight survivors are expected, all eight of those that were wounded are expected to survive. Another Saudi student allegedly videotaped the attack while two others watched from a nearby car. Now, military bases across the United States have been put on high alert in the wake of Friday's shooting. Investigators looking into the deadly attack at the naval base in Florida said Sunday they were working under the presumption it was an act of terrorism involving a lone gunman, and that no arrests have been made in connection with the incident. Joining me now with her analysis is Claire Lopez. She's the Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy. Claire, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. I'm glad to be with you.
All right. Is there any question in your mind as to whether or not this was a terrorist attack?
Well, the only thing that I would change slightly is the wording. Instead of calling this a terror attack, it was a jihad attack. It was an attack of jihad terrorism, if you will. Absolutely, there's no question about that. We know now from tweets and other things, of course now erased, that Al-Shamarani had publicized. He had broadcast his beliefs and his intentions prior to the attack, which took place last Friday on the 6th of December.
And this brings back to mind, he was there at the Naval Air Station. This brings back to mind two of the Saudi young men who were in the United States at 9/11 learning to fly planes. And the majority of the attackers on 9/11 were Saudi nationals. So, I mean, this dredges back up a lot of those same issues about this relationship with Saudi Arabia, in particular between our militaries.
Well, I would add a couple of things to that, Tony. And the first, of course, is that there were multiple failures at multiple levels that permitted this individual, this 21-year-old second lieutenant, Mohammed Saeed Al-Shamarani, First of all, to be in the Saudi Air Force. Number two, to be selected for this very prestigious flight program at Pensacola, Florida. And number three, to receive a visa at a U.S. consulate somewhere in Saudi Arabia before he came over. And then finally, during the 2 years that he's been here in the United States, he's been here since 2017, supposedly under the supervision and tutelage of American military trainers and instructors. And nobody noticed anything? Well, no, I'm sure they didn't. And here's why. Because something that many of us call the Great Purge, that is the removal of all language, training, instruction about accurate instruction about Islam and jihad and Sharia, have been removed from the U.S. government-wide. Diplomatic officers, intelligence officers, military officers are denied this training. They don't know what to ask, what to look for, and what they're seeing, even when it's in front of their eyes. So multiple failures at many levels. But there's another, this is my own insight into this, and I think that similarly to the Khashoggi killing of last October 2018, that's a year ago, October 2018, at the consulate of Saudi Arabia in Istanbul, Turkey, I think there are forces inside the kingdom that do not want to see the young crown prince, MBS he's called, Mohammed bin Salman, son of the king, Salman, to succeed. They're jealous and angry that he jumped over them into the succession for the leadership of Saudi Arabia. And also, the very powerful Wahhabi clerical institution is being systematically dismantled by MBS inside the kingdom. Hundreds of Wahhabi clerics have gone to jail. These forces do not want him to succeed, and they don't want the relationship between Saudi Arabia and the United States to continue.
So you think this is intentional to sabotage and undercut that relationship by these types of events?
I think that's worth looking at.
Mm-hmm. How extensive is the Saudi relationship with the United States military? How many Saudi officers or military personnel do we have in the country?
Well, I don't know across the entire country. At Pensacola, I think at least there were several dozen. There probably were more at other military training bases around the country for different kinds of programs. This was a naval flight training program. And that's in addition to many, many thousands of Saudi students in other subjects, academic subjects at universities.
I mean,
but
this,
it's not just Saudis, of course. I mean, we welcome foreign students, hundreds of thousands of them, including from places like China.
But this certainly strains that relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. I mean, can you imagine if American military personnel did this in another country? I mean, the outcry. I mean, this is a part of this is the vetting that takes place on both sides, as you pointed out earlier.
Well, yes, and mightn't that be precisely the point of the attack as well as of the Khashoggi killing?
Right.
To strain that relationship, to put a stake through it, to destroy it. To destroy it and to destroy MBS himself, whom they would like to be rid of permanently.
But certainly we need to do a better job of vetting those that we allow into these programs. And as you pointed out, those that do that have been handicapped because of policies from
yes.
the previous administration. Claire,
exactly.
Thanks so much.
Although I have to say, going back farther than that to
yes.
decades past.
Yes, you are correct. It is not just a Democrat problem. Democratic administration, the Republican administration's having the same issues. Claire Lopez, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate your insights. All right, folks. It's problematic. But this is a country, Saudi Arabia has some real issues on many fronts. And I think if I agree with her, there's promise in the future. With the new leadership, but we need to be very, very careful in how we go forward. All right, don't go away. When we come back, Mitch McConnell talking about the distinction between the two parties on religious freedom. That's next.
The topic of sexual sin can be difficult to discuss in the church, but it's something that needs to be addressed. To help inform this conversation, FRC has a new publication for church leaders called Safeguard Your Ministry from Moral Failure. In it, Dr. Jesse Gill, a licensed psychologist, specifically addresses sexual sin and the susceptibility of those in church leadership. He discusses the contributing factors to moral failure, a practical understanding of our sexual nature, and a call for Christian leaders to increase their dependency on Christ. The principles found in this publication will instruct leaders in meeting their emotional, relational, and even sexual needs in healthy ways so that there will be less of a foothold for temptation. Safeguard Your Ministry for Moral Failure is a must-read for everyone involved in church ministry. To read the publication and learn more, visit frc.org/safeguard. That's frc.org/safeguard.
Are you a parent of a school-aged child? If so, then you understand that navigating your educational system is one of the biggest challenges facing families across the United States today. Family Research Council's new publication titled, The SPLC's Teaching Tolerance, What Parents, Teachers, and Administrators Need to Know, helps parents identify and monitor a specific agenda that is being pushed on their children in public schools. The highly partisan left-wing Southern Poverty Law Center is one of the greatest offenders on this front with their program titled Teaching Tolerance. This program is designed to infiltrate schools with radically progressive education resources that undermine Christian values about marriage and family. FRC's brochure outlines the content within the SPLC's Teaching Tolerance Project and empowers parents to protect their children against the SPLC's agenda. Learn more at frc.org/teachingtolerance. That's frc.org/teachingtolerance.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So good to have you along on this Monday, December the 9th. All right, if you would like to partner with us, we've got folks that are ready and eager to talk with you, standing by to take your phone call. We've got a generous donor that has made a challenge gift available, a match, where if you will join with us, we can double what you give between now and the next couple of weeks. So we got folks standing by to take your phone call, 800-225-4008. If you like Washington Watch, you appreciate it. This program comes to you because of folks like you that support us, are partners with us all across the country. We get no government funding. It's all individuals, Christians, concerned citizens who want to make sure that faith, family, and freedom is defended in the face of the increasingly vicious attacks by the left, who want to silence you. I don't know if you've figured that out yet or not, but the left, they can't win on the merits of their debate, so they want to silence. They want to take your voice away from you. And the same for us, because we are your voice in many ways here in Washington, D.C., and they want to silence us, and it's only because of your support that we continue. So if you'd like to support us, give us a call, 800-225-4008, or go to tonyperkins.com. Now, speaking of this, the big issue is religious liberty. And that's where that is ground zero. We talk about that a lot. Well, last week, Mitch McConnell went to the Senate floor, and it was kind of unexpected. But he took a moment, what we would call a teachable moment, as he was talking about what was happening with judges. And it was a speech much like Attorney General William Barr's speech. But the majority leader decided it was time to basically underscore why this issue of religious freedom was so important. And I'm going to play a couple of clips. I want to just read a quote as he started the speech. He said, quote, "I want to take a moment to help clarify why I and millions of other Americans care so much about having federal judges who believe in the radical notion that words matter and that a judge's job is to follow the law and the Constitution. Take, for example, the subject of religious freedom, the liberty of conscience, and the freedom to live out our faiths has been a foundational principle from the Republic's earliest days. Many of the first Europeans who arrived in the New World came here fleeing religious persecution. And I will tell you, end of quote there, I will tell you the majority leader has done an outstanding job in getting the president's nominees confirmed. And the courts will be a lasting legacy of not only President Trump but Mitch McConnell. Let me play another. Here's another clip. We're talking about the founders and why they came here. He continues, and this is what he says.
So let me contrast the understanding of the founders with a couple of current events. Last month, New York State convinced a district judge to throw out the Trump administration's conscience protection rule for health care providers. This straightforward rule ensured health care workers could not be forced to perform or assist with medical procedures that profoundly violate their religious beliefs. But the radical Democrats in New York could not abide this basic protection for people of faith. Instead, they want to force Christians and other people of faith who work in healthcare to either assist in procedures like abortion or lose their jobs. So much for freedom of conscience. New York's behavior is part of a disturbing trend. Powerful interests on the left want to shrink freedom of religion until it means freedom to go to church for an hour on Sundays as long as it doesn't impact the rest of your life. That shrunken interpretation is nothing like what our founders intended. And candidly, I'm not sure how much longer the modern Democratic Party will even believe in that.
See, there was a time when it came to religious freedom that both political parties were singing out of the same hymn book. There was a recognition. I mean, we talk about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act back in the 90s that passed almost unanimously. Bill Clinton was the one who signed it into law. But now all of a sudden religious liberty has become controversial. And it's because there are those that really are not liberals. They're leftist. And they see religion, transcendent truth, morality is getting in the way of their efforts to redefine human sexuality. The same thing they're doing with science. I mean, the so-called left, who's always worshipped and embraced science, is denying basic biology. But there's more here to what McConnell says, because it really comes down to the judges and the political candidates that may pick them. I'm going to finish this on the other side of the break, because I got another clip I want to play of Senator McConnell. Then we're going to talk about a deceptively named piece of legislation, Fairness for All Act. It is, in fact, an attack on religious freedom, and it would essentially eliminate what I made reference to earlier, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs, are going to join me for that conversation. During the break, feel free to give us a call, 800-225-4008. Those standing by to take your pledge to be a partner with Washington Watch. All right, don't go away. Coming back with more Washington Watch right after this. News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I almost feel like it's disrespectful to speak while the music is playing there. One of my favorite Christmas songs. All right, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, we were discussing remarks made last week by Senator Mitch McConnell, the majority leader in the Senate, regarding religion, religious freedom, I should say. And, you know, they're increasingly, there's areas of such clear contrast between the two parties. And it used to be that it wasn't so much in the social issues, the moral issues. There used to be some distinction, but not the way there is today. For instance, on the life issue, the two parties could not be farther apart. And then on this issue of religious freedom. Now, you see a lot of lip service. And you'll even see verses quoted by some Democratic presidential candidates. But when you look at their policies, it certainly doesn't influence their policies. But here's, again, a clip of Senator McConnell in his speech on the floor last week talking about religious freedom and what's happening as it pertains to what the Democratic Party is pursuing. Play clip number 4.
A few months ago, a Democrat running for president told CNN that government should take away the tax-exempt status of churches and religious institutions that disagree with left-wing positions. This, Madam President, was not some fringe candidate. It was a guy whom Democrats and the mainstream media had likened to John F. Kennedy, openly suggesting the federal government should punish churches if liberals don't like their social views. How appalling. These disturbing signs have not been limited to the courts or to the Democratic campaign trail. Absurd anti-religious arguments have appeared right here in the Senate. In the last several years, some of our Democratic colleagues have tried literally to impose religious tests on nominees for federal office. Just take the no religious test clause and the First Amendment and throw it right out the window.
And what he's making reference to, there's been a number of candidates who have been told, and not just judicial nominees. It's been Russ Vogt was who was at the office of OMB was basically told by Bernie Sanders that because of his Christian faith that he was unqualified to serve in government. And that's been said about a number of judicial candidates by Democratic members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. So there is clearly a line of separation between the two parties when it comes to religious freedom, and we're seeing the steady drumbeat of attacks on religious freedom. And all the more reason why you need to know what's going on, be involved in what's going on, and support those who support religious freedom. Because everything we care about, everything we want to advocate for, whether it's life, whether it's parental rights, what happens in your child's classroom, human sexuality, marriage, you name it, as Christians, our position, our viewpoint, especially if you have a biblical worldview, it emanates from Scripture. It comes from our faith. You see, religion and religious freedom is not like this addendum to life. As a Christian, as a follower of Jesus Christ, it is essential to who you are and to the positions that you take or advocate for. And so what they want to do is they want to take that away, say, oh, you can't. You can't be a religious person. You can't believe that Bible and be involved in government. That's essentially that is what they're saying. Folks, there is a battle raging literally for the soul of America and for the people that live in this country. It is not time to shrink back in any form or fashion. Right. Exhibit A in this attack on religious freedom, although there are so many exhibits, I guess this would probably be ZZ. We're down to that many exhibits. But Friday, another example, the Fairness for All Act introduced, which is kind of the Equality Act light. That was a version that actually passed the House. Nancy Pelosi, one of her top priorities, that passed about a month and a half ago. This is another version that's being unfortunately supported by some, I think, well-intentioned but deceived individuals that think that there's common ground between those that are advocating for unrestrained sexual liberty and religious liberty. And quite frankly, they're just incompatible. Well, joining me now to talk about this legislation, what it does and where it might go, is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, so this bill not getting a lot of attention because the left really doesn't like it, but we still need to talk about it because it's out there. There may be some that might pick it up thinking, oh, this is nice. It just wants to make peace. Let's talk about the Fairness for All Act.
Sure. So it does sound good in the title. You say that, well, who could be against fairness for all, right? Well, the problem in reality is it doesn't provide fairness for anyone. It tries to give the LGBT lobby what they want in terms of sexual orientation and gender identity protections and special protections across a number of areas of federal law. Those alone infringe on religious liberty because there are people who are implicated by these new requirements. It's not very fair for. Baronel Stutzman, for instance, is not protected by the current version of the Fairness for All Act. So how exactly is it fair to her to be able to live out her faith in her business by saying to her, Republican congressmen, leaders of our country, federal legislators are pushing a measure which is telling her, in essence, you don't have any right to live out your faith in your business. So it's not fair to her. It's not fair to a lot of people. And on the flip side of this, the religious liberty protections that they try to give in the bill really are very, very limited and inadequate. They really restate protections which are already in law, protections for religious institutions and churches to hire according to their faith, for example. That's already protected. So you don't need another federal bill to do this. But we've seen this kind of thing before where you put something on paper to say, look, we're giving you religious liberty protections, but really it's unnecessary. So you're trying to say, look at what we're doing here. You're really not doing anything. And meanwhile, giving away half the farm in terms of the SOGI protections that are in other areas of law across a number of destructive areas implicating how children are going to be treated in terms of their supposed gender identity and the like. So all to say, this is not really a fair bill. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. But it's important to make a point that its attempt to try to please everyone, you don't please anyone. You end up pleasing no one.
You said the SOGIs, the sexual orientation and gender identity, and those measures that people have encountered at local levels, state levels across the country, that involves the bathroom situation, the locker room situation. This involves the pronoun use. There's all of these things that it's like oil and water. There's no common ground with these where someone who refuses to play along can lose their job. We've seen people lose their jobs because they use the wrong pronoun. We've seen the privacy and safety of individuals that have been violated because of these locker room and bathroom policies. That's what we're opening the door to. And one of the things that I've noticed is I've traveled to these states that have these SOGI provisions that they don't – and there's some, so I don't want to say universally that it's not, but in most places – The most of the public places don't have these open restroom, these free-for-all policies in the restrooms. It's only in the schools. This is about indoctrinating the children, the young people, preparing them to make this transition. And then you lose. You will lose all standard of morality, right and wrong.
Tony, in fairness for all, speaking of schools, children in schools are implicated in several ways. One, when it comes to federal funding, Title VI federal funding, including religious institutions, there is no significant religious freedom protections from the imposition of the gender identity and sexual orientation ideologies through the federal funding. So now you're going to have schools who are forced to be on the hook to in order to receive funding to be promoting these ideologies. That's going to filter down through our educational system and impact children. Children also in the adoption and foster care system in the custody of the state have no protection from the state posing this ideology, affirming their supposed gender identity. There initially this bill looked like it was going to force parents, foster parents and adoptive parents to violate their conscience in terms of how they would want to treat children regarding the children's supposed gender identity. There's an attempt to fix that issue by saying that parents don't have to subscribe to the state's beliefs on these things in the foster adoption process. I'm not convinced by that. At a minimum, the bill that we're seeing right now is very vague and very hazy, and it could force parents to violate their conscience by implicating them in a system which it brings them into a position where they're affirming a child's gender identity or sexual conduct in a way that's harmful for that child. So this gets into adoptive and foster care parent rights and how they view children in their care and the child's – what's good for the child, him or herself. So the children themselves are affected. So for those reasons and others, there's just a lot of problems with this. I think also – this is important for Christians to pause and look at something like this and really understand why Christians can't support it when it comes to how a Christian views sexuality. We've often said as a Christian, our identity is in Christ. It's not in our sexual attractions or temptations, whatever direction those lead us. Identity is not in that. We know God proclaims our identity in who Christ declares us to be. So Christians can't be in a position of putting forth policies that affirm the idea that our identity is in our sexuality. I mean, that's just the opposite of what we know as Christians, and we shouldn't, in the face of in fearing what may come in the future, we should not compromise on what we know to be true, objectively true, according to what God's Word teaches us.
There are some things that are so fundamental that we, you know, there is a time and a place to compromise, to reach consensus, but there are some things that are you can't compromise on transcendent truth.
Right.
You can, you know, there's things that aren't, you know, all that clear that you can have differing opinions on and you can work through and reach common ground. But when we're talking about we're created in the image of God, and Jesus himself speaks to this issue in Matthew chapter 19 that we are created. Have you not read from the beginning? They're created male and female. I mean, so there's not a question here. What we're doing is you're embracing something that runs counter to the clear teaching of Scripture.
You are. And Christians are going to have differing approaches on strategy at times. But this is a question not of strategy but of truth and transcendent truth for the Christian when it comes to what we are putting forth and advancing about the human being, about who the human being is and what is good ultimately. We have to voice what God commands us to teach and to stand for the good of society. And this is not a question of differing strategy, different approach. We know, as you mentioned earlier, we don't always get what we want in every respect, and so we have to prudentially apply our views to the political world and political system. But on this question, we have to stand for God's word.
Now, from a practical, constitutional perspective, I have a larger issue with this, and this is something that's become prevalent, is that religious freedom is often seen as being attached to a religious entity or organization, that somehow a church has religious freedom, a nonprofit that's religious has religious freedom. The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment is to American citizens. It's not to institutions. Now, those institutions are made up of the people in those institutions that have First Amendment freedoms.
Right. And so when we start to look at religious freedom as just for some or for some institutions, for some groups, for some people who would fit certain categories, we leave everyone else hanging out to dry, we start to chip away ourselves at religious freedom and stop and mitigate the positive impact that religious faith lived out in all spheres of society will have for society, for the common good, for the public good. So as you know, this is why another reason we're opposing this bill, because it sacrifices religious freedom. It sacrifices religious freedom for many people who it does not protect and who now no longer have the protection to live out their faith for the good of society, for the flourishing of our country. And this is, you know, if we look back in our country's history, Tony, I think it's just overwhelming the evidence of religious faith contributing to the common good. We shouldn't be in a position of overlooking that, much less saying we don't care about that anymore.
We're almost out of time, Travis, but quickly give our listeners a sense of what they need to do at this point. I mean, this has not gotten a lot of support. Democrats are not supporting. It's not liberal enough, and only 8 Republicans are supporting it so far. What should people do at this point?
Yeah, I think at this point, folks just need to be informed. We're going to come out with a publication on this, overviewing the issue very shortly, and if they can be informed, follow what we're researching on this and providing in terms of materials. That's the important thing at this point, because we have to see what kind of traction this gets in the never-ending fight for religious freedom.
All right. Travis Weber, as always, great to have you on the program, and thank you for keeping us up to date on happening on Capitol Hill.
Thank you.
All right, folks, out of time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, "When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing."
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.